Three times, the phrase Eretz Zavas Chalav Udivash appears in the beginning of Parshas Kisavo. It appears 16 times in the Torah, another 5 times in Tanakh. Almost all of the situations describing Eretz Yisrael first introduced when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises them in Shmos Perigimel, I will remove you from the suffering and the poverty of Egypt. I will replace you and travel with you to a land of Zavas, Chalav Udvash, loosely translated as milk and honey. It's sadly enough employed once by Korach and his crew, in which they describe Egypt, the land that Moshe, quote-unquote, forcibly removed them from as a land of Zavas, Chalav Udvash, and then they taunt Moshe, and they said, when they say, Aflo al Eretz Zavas, Chalav Udvash, Aviosano. So they, of course, they recast the truth by describing Mitzrayim as a land of Chalav Udvash, and they taunt and mock Moshe for not fulfilling or not achieving his stated goals. Now, there's a lot of conversation which starts at the level of the Tanayim, what Chalav is and what Divash is. The simple reading is that Chalav is milk, and Divash, at least in the modern lexicon, Divash would be honey, honey from bees, honey created from honeycombs. This is not the classic view of Chazal. Chazal typically interpreted Divash as not honey from bees, but honey from dates, from tamarim. And not just from tamarim, but from fruits in general. In part because of the employment of the term Zavas, Chalav Udivash, while bringing Bikurim. Bikurim is delivering fruits of Eretz Yisrael. One of the fruits of Eretz Yisrael is Zeit Shemen Udivash, the 7 medium of Eretz Yisrael. Dvash comes from Tamarim, one of the fruits included in Bikurim. This is a Yushalmi in Bikurim, and Rashi quotes it several times in Shmos Yud Gimel. The Dvash doesn't mean Dvash Devarim, but Dvash Timarim, and possibly, of course, as a general phrase, of the juice and the sap of very, very healthy fruits. Now, the truth is that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer in the Mechilta. Rabbi Eliezer feels that even the word chalav refers to peros, that chalav refers to the sap and the juice and the richness of fruit that flows, that emerges from peros. Eliezer omer chalav ze chalav haperos, dvash ze dvash tamarim. So according to Eliezer, there's a consistency. Both chalav and dvash refers to fruit. Rabbi Akiva also has consistency, but consistency on the opposite, or very different from the classic interpretation. Rabbi Akiva said chalav is milk. He quotes a pasuk in Yoel. It talks about the mountains producing milk. And dvash, he feels, is what he calls dvash hayaros, the honey of the forest, which would probably mean the honey produced not through fruits which grow in orchards, but through bees which create or who create their honeycombs and their nests in forests. And he quotes the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. So it's interesting that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer took dichotomous views, and they each felt that there was a consistency between chalav and dvash. That according to Rabbi Akiva, chalav is both chalav and dvash have little to do with fruits, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, they each have to do with fruits. And I think that part of this machlokis should be understood as follows. And I think this has been pointed out by others. There's a professor, Yisrael Rosenson, who delivers shiurim, and I think he pointed this out, that typically fruits and pastures for grazing, vegetation and pastures for grazing, they each require their own landscapes, their own independent areas, because they tend to subvert or in some ways counter each other. Large swaths of land available for pasture to raise cattle, to produce milk, don't lend themselves for orchards and vineyards and vegetable patches. You have to make a decision what to do with those large patches of land. Not only that, but typically if you raise cattle in an area of vegetation or orchards, then the cattle could cause damage and harm by eating, by trampling. So you're talking about two very, very different forms of produce. And typically, the same tract of land can produce both. And certainly, a smaller landscape, such as the land of Israel, wouldn't be expected to produce both. And part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise is that naturally or supernaturally, the land of Israel will be capable of sustaining both. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer are highlighting the exclusivity. So Rabbi Akiva interprets both to mean, or to stem from large land dedicated to pasture, to grazing, meadows, untamed forests where bees can form nests, where animals can graze and produce milk. Rabbi Eliezer is describing them both as relating to orchards, planting, growing, agriculture, which could obviate or could exclude the ability to create pasture land for animals to produce milk. And they're highlighting the fact that at least naturally, these two are exclusive. Ultimately, I don't think our Masara adopted either Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Eliezer, and our Masara created a hybrid, where typically chalav was seen by most as milk, and dvash was stemming from cattle, being produced by cattle, and dvash was seen as the sap or the juice of fruit, whether it's dates or whether it's general fruit. And it highlights the ability of a small country, a small land such as Eretz Yisrael, to produce both. Perhaps the metaphor that best captures this is a very intriguing Gemara in Ksivos. In this Gemara, Rami Bar Yecheskel travels to Bnei Brak, and he sees these sheep or goats that are standing under a date tree, and the sap from the date tree is dripping and becomes mixed or intermingled with the milk. And this is a sign of, and he repeats, Hainu Zavas Chalavu Devash. This to him reminds him that this is a land that's supernatural, that can combine two very, very different yields that typically are mutually exclusive. In particular, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces this to the Jews in Mitzrayim, Egypt is a land that's covered with the swell of the Nile. And the swell of the Nile prevents certainly pasture lands, where the Jews have to be located in Goshen, which probably did have pasture land available because they were herders, they were shepherds. But certainly you can't grow fruits in areas that are overwhelmed by bogs and swamps, perhaps vegetables, and that's why there seem to be an abundance of vegetables in Egypt. Zechanor, Zedagas, Akishurim, Avatichim. You don't see fruits in Mizraim. So for the Jewish people to hear about eating fruits, Zavas Chalav Udevash, Zeishemen Udevash, reminded them they were entering a country that wasn't just producing vegetables, but could produce fruits, and in addition, could enable them to raise cattle and produce milk. So this Gemara in Ksuvos Kufiyud Aleph from the days, which is articulated in a manner to highlight the supernatural abilities of a land to produce milk and honey at the same time, or milk and fruit sap, or the juices of fruit, highlights the fact that these two typically don't cohere in the same landscape. I'll just conclude by describing the difference between Zavas Chalav Udvash in a manner that's more metaphoric, and in a manner that Rav Lichtenstein would often speak of, both in relationship to Eretz Yisrael, Zavas Chalav Udvash, as well as to another experience in religion that's compared to milk and honey, and that's Torah, Devash V'chalav Tachas L'shonech. Rav Lichtenstein believes there's a contrast between something which is basic, I wouldn't say tasteless, but it isn't sweet, its taste doesn't leap out at you, it isn't as stimulating. It's milk, but it's basic and necessary for health. It's vital, it provides vitamins and growth and bone structure. So it's something associated with health, something associated with a basic diet, and something which is absolutely necessary to live on, but sweetens, creates aesthetics, joy, happiness, the sweetness of honey, especially if it's the honey of bees, but even if it's the overwhelming sweetness that oozes from fruits. And Rav Lichtenstein urged us to see both of these qualities in Eretz Yisrael. Avram hosts the angels, and one of the backbones or the spines of his meal is he feeds them milk. Whereas, by contrast, Yaakov dispatches the children to return to Mitzrayim to attempt to liberate Shimon, and he delivers gifts for them to award the Egyptians a little bit of tzari, a little bit of dvash. So milk is used to host guests as part of a meal. Dvash, which is sweet, which isn't routine, which isn't part of a daily diet, is employed to deliver a gift. And our view to Israel, and to a degree our perspective upon Torah, has to incorporate or contain that duality, that it's our basic identity to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's our basic identity to study Torah, without which we couldn't live. Keim chayenu v'arech yameinu. It's the baseline of our experience as a Jew. But in addition, it still has to convey that sense of special, sweet, unique aesthetics, something which can't become too humdrum and too routine, but it also can't become something which is relegated just to something special or unique and something detached from our day-to-day routine. So it has to convey those two elements of Dvash and Chalav.